Make sure you check out our online store where we work with our graphic designer to create stunning garment and product designs that feature a wide variety of aircraft types such as British fighters, World War II aircraft, American bombers, Russian fighters and much more. You can pick your favourite designs and personalise any items within our Redbubble store that range from clothing right the way through to stationery. All of our designs feature our logo so you can show your support for the channel while getting a quality product. You can head to our website aircrewinterview.tv and click store or go to redbubble.com/people/ACinterview. Thank you and enjoy.
Like I said, my name's Trevor Aldridge, call sign's Dozen. Started flying back in 2010 with the Air Force, went through University of Texas A&M and then went to pilot training in Texas at Shepherd Air Force Base, the home of the Euro-NATO Joint Jet Pilot Training. From there, I track selected to go fly the F-15. So I flew the F-15C, learned to fly that in Oregon for about 8 months, then went to Okinawa, Japan, flew that there for 3 years in Okinawa, Japan, all over the Pacific and Middle East and stuff like that. Went to Shepherd, back to Shepherd to teach introduction to fighter fundamentals. So back in the T-38, teaching how to dogfight, drop bombs, that kind of stuff. And then went to England to go fly the F-15. And then got picked up for the Thunderbirds to learn to fly the F-16, went to go fly the F-16 on the Thunderbirds. And then from there, I transitioned out of the Air Force. And now I'm flying civilian and I'm going to be flying reserves part time as well, back teaching the introduction of fighter fundamentals here in the next month or so.
So before the questions come in, like guys, get your questions coming in for a dozen. But I think we kind of touched on and you know our previous interview. But which did you prefer, flying the F-16 or the F-15?
I mean, to be honest, they're both incredible airplanes, right? So like, it's easy to like you know pick and choose between the two. They're both awesome. So. I personally prefer the F-15 just because you're flying that aircraft directly, right? You have direct connection to the hydromechanical inputs of the aircraft. So you are flying that aircraft directly. And much of the same reason why I like driving a manual car instead of an automatic car, I like that like direct connection to the machine, which you lose in the F-16. The F-16, it's all fly-by-wire. And so you just kind of think about it and the airplane does it, which is really cool in its own right, right? I mean, it's really cool. But me personally, just my personal style, what I like better, I like being connected directly to the airplane. And, but I mean, both are phenomenal airplane. I wouldn't turn down, a chance to fly either one in a heartbeat, you know?
Absolutely. And, just like before the questions come in, on the side there, how many, like, what was the ratio of like, the Thunderbird pilots to like, you know, F-15, F-16 pilots coming into the team?
So when I joined the team, so we cycle the team out half the new team every year. So there was three of the six demonstration pilots swapped out. And of the three of us, only one was an F-16 guy. So I was an Eagle guy, F-15. And then you had an F-22 guy and Gambo, he was number six. And then the number four pilot, he was the only F-16 pilot. So it really just depends year to year and who applies and who's appropriate for the team. So, when we were on the team, we had number one was an F-16 guy. IS-2 was not, three was not, four was, five was, and six was not. So it was about half and half to answer your question.
Brilliant. As you can see there, there's a few questions coming in, so I'm going to let you loose. And guys, really enjoy this Q&A because it's, we're in for a treat here. So enjoy.
Sweet. Guys, thanks. I'm jumping on the YouTube now looking at the chat. So if y'all got any questions there, just throw it in the chat. I'll look to answer it. And excited y'all are here. This is cool. This is my first time doing this. So hopefully I don't screw it up too bad. Jez James just says, hi, it's Jez from Wales. That's pretty sweet. I guess a lot of y'all are from Europe. So that's pretty cool. As y'all know, I spent a little bit of time flying the F-15 out of Europe. I only spent about 4 months out of there total. So it was really quick because I got picked up for the team and had to leave early. It was kind of sad. All right, sweet. Who do we got? We got Matt Thurman. He says, let's go. I'm so excited. I'm so mad you couldn't make it to Oshkosh. Matt, I was frustrated as well, too. I had a job to do, and you know that's how life works, and we all have jobs to do. But I was definitely looking forward to making out to Oshkosh this year. And honestly, I want to bring my family out, bring my boys out. But I'm going to figure out. I'll make sure that I get to make it next year. Looking forward to it. All right. Templar 7832 says, "Hi, Mike. Hi, Dozen. This should be good. Can you tell us how you got your call sign?" That's a pretty tough story to go from the very beginning. All right. So I'll go ahead and tell it. So the call sign comes from a couple different things. So you've got the 12 just kept popping up over and over again. So the way you get your call sign is once you show up to your fighter unit, you might be getting a few kind of joke call signs that don't really last very long, but your like permanent call sign, the one that sticks with you, is whenever you step into your first fighter unit, or at least that's how it works in America. Once you get mission qualified, then you can go and get named. So for me, I showed up and the number 12 just your call sign's a dozen, right? Like the number 12, and 12 just kept popping up over and over and over again. So, you know, I showed up and, you know, 12 days after showing up on island in Okinawa, this is with the 67th Fighting Cocks in Okinawa, Japan. Like 12 days after showing up, I was starting to fly, which was like crazy fast. Just kind of in processing. I had, you know, I went to the University of Texas A&M, which is home of the 12th man. So 12 was there. I happened to be assigned to locker number 12. I mean, 12 just kind of was like all over the place, but really the story comes from, my first, sortie with, the F-15, in Okinawa is supposed to be a local area orientation flight. So what we call an LAO, you go out as a two ship, you got an instructor in the other airplane flying with you. You go out, you do some aircraft handling, stall the aircraft, right? Kind of push it fast, pull some G's, just kind of get comfortable with the airplane. Low threat, not a whole lot of things going on. Get used to the accent that you have over there in Japan and the Japanese accent from the controllers there. And so we do the flight, we come back, everything's fine. And then we're actually what we're doing called hot pitting that day. So as many of y'all know, you shut down one of the engines, for us, you shut down the left engine. They hook you up, they fill you up. So your right engine's still running. They let you go. You start up number one engine and then you go take off again. You go fly a second flight, second sortie. And, we were flying out and, my instructor, Sin Schiller, awesome dude. He had just finished the instructor upgrade and I was his like first flight after that. We go out and we're like, hey, let's go. He's like, what do you want to do? I was like, I want to fight BFM. So like, all right, sweet. I'll be, as a bro, he decided that he was going to be defensive, which is the harder one of the two to do. So meaning he's looking backwards and all I had to do was look forward. And, he was like, all right, I'll be defensive. We'll do a 6K, which means you're starting the fight at about 6,000 feet away. So, I'm counting down the ranges that I'm pointing at him. He's looking backwards. You know, I'm counting down 9,000, 8,000, 7,000, 6,000 fights on. And right as I call 6,000 fights on, as he's looking backwards, he goes into a cloud, which is against the training rules. And as a dumb lieutenant, I don't really know what to do. So I just kind of roll out, drive the turn circle like you normally do, to try and get on his turn circle as he's in the cloud. Well, nobody's calling a terminate. So I'm like, I guess we're just going to figure this out. And he pops out of the cloud. I'm like, all right. And I could tell based off how fast he was going that I was extremely late, right? There's a certain time that you're supposed to go to get onto his turn circle. And I was way past that because I didn't have a visual on him. So I roll, set my lift vector. I'm going to go to pull. But instead of being at the desired like 410, 430 knots, I was like 550 knots. And when I pulled, I wound up pulling way more G's than expected and pretty dang near close to 12 G's, which the 9 is obviously the limit for the F-15. Also, that jet happened to be tail 0012. So 12 just kept popping up over and over and over again. Also, the Dirty Dozen used to be a squadron that was of F-15s that was in Alaska, but also was assigned in Kadena. So anyways, it's 12 kept popping up all over the place. And so dozen is what they gave me. So there's that. And Mike, at this point, do we just keep kind of keep going down the list? Okay. Sweet. All right. Sorry, guys, that was a long story. But that was the first one. And that was a very long story. I'll make them quicker. All right. Dan Dennett says, I don't know if he's calling me Charlie Sheen or what, but he's laughing. Scott Wayne says, hey, Dozen, do you have any memorable sorties flying out of Lake Neath? Do you ever fly the Mach Loop? Yeah, I mean, I've got some pretty fun sorties. The squadron was actually deployed when I showed up, so there wasn't a ton of flights happening. But my first flight in the F-15, it was really cool because it was the Heritage paint scheme with the blue tail on it. And that was the very first flight out of Lake Neath, so getting to go up and do some VFM. On that and flying that history, that D-Day, with the invasion stripes and everything like that. That was pretty cool. Now, I wanted to do Mach Loop. There's a couple times I tried to do it, but when I was there, the weather wasn't so great, so I wound up not being able to make it out to Mock Loop, unfortunately. All right, sweet. Dan Dennett said F-15 always looked more badass, like the Phantom. I do think the F-15 looks badass. The Phantom looks like a flying brick, but it is pretty cool. I got the chance to fly that back in 2012. But yeah, F-15 is pretty freaking sweet. I mean, it's got 104 to zero kill ratio. There's nothing else to kind of compare to that. So, all right, Templar 7832 again says, how long did it take you to get that speed to get formation aerobatics down? So formation aerobatics for us is like, dude, that is straight up day one stuff. So you learn in the T6 at pilot training when we started, right? They put you in a 1,000 horsepower turboprop aircraft with an injection seat and everything like that. And you know, a couple months into training, you're learning formation aerobatics. So we did that in the T6, and then we jumped in the T38. We did the same thing in the T38. And really what it is just a building block approach, because once you start getting into basic fighter maneuvers, dogfighting and stuff like that, you're now maneuvering in relation to another aircraft, and the aircraft is trying to shake you off, obviously, and you're doing your best to try and stick with it. So formation aerobatics are kind of nice because you kind of know what everybody's doing, and they're not trying to shake you off. All right. John Minter says, have you been to Red Flag? If so, have you got any good sorties? Yeah, I've been to Red Flag both in Las Vegas, Nellis Air Force Base, as well as the Red Flag up in Alaska. And then the other thing that's kind of cool is that there's what we call large force exercises, which is what Red Flag is. That is, dude, that's all over the world. There's large force exercise happening all over the world. So I've had a chance to be part of a pretty cool LFE in the UAE, in Saudi Arabia, Guam, all over the place. But I've had some sweet sorties. We're going to keep going on the questions because I'm sure we'll get some more specifics on that. Space Dream says, what's it like flying with Thunderbirds and how often do you train? Dude, flying with Thunderbirds was awesome. The training was challenging. Specifically, the F-16 has a side stick that was, it is, like I said, fly-by-wire, and the stick doesn't really move. So it took me a while to get used to the pitch sensitivity of that when you have to trim nose down quite a bit. So you're holding the stick back, and it took a lot of practice to get to the point where I was comfortable flying as close as Thunderbirds do in that airplane, especially not having any experience in it. But the training is pretty intense. So the team will generally do anywhere between 180 to 100 flights prior to the training season, or in the training season prior to flying. And and then once you do the air show, generally you go out somewhere on a Thursday. You do a practice on Friday. You do the air show Saturday, Sunday, Monday. You come home, maybe fly once after you get home. Tuesday's a training day. You fly once or twice on Tuesday. Wednesday's your day off, and you start it all over again. So pretty fast and furious. It's a quick time frame. All right. Let's see. Elaine Wesley, and I'm sorry if I mispronounce y'all's names, says, I fly the F-16, F-15, and DCS. I love both, but my heart's the F-15. Is the F-16 really hard to land in real life in terms of how fast and agile it is on the runway compared to the F-15? I don't think it's hard to land. Honestly, like as I've been jumping into the tail dragger and stuff like that recently, I think those are way harder to land. Fighters are designed to be fairly easy to fly. But it definitely did take a little bit of getting used to. So the F-15 is very similar to kind of the T-38 as far as how it lands, because you're controlling the aircraft. And you know, as you get slowed down, and you're in the flare and in the ground effect, your airspeed decreases and the airplane will kind of settle onto the ground. Well, because the F-16 is fly-by-wire, it just likes to fly. So it's always doing the flight controls to try and keep 1G and keep where you're at. So if you level off and you've got your flight path marker on the horizon, it's going to do everything it can to keep that, which means it's not going to settle down. So the F-16, you've got a flare, and then you have to kind of just like ease a little bit and let the aircraft settle onto the runway, because that thing will just continue to try to keep flying. And if you get too high, then now you run into problems scraping the tail. So it definitely is a different way to land. I wouldn't call it hard, but it is a different way to land. All right, sweet. Sylvester Stewart says, how much lighter is a Thunderbird than a Squadron F-16? Honestly, so the Thunderbird F-16 is just basically very, very, very similar to a combat F-16. a traditional squadron F-16. The primary difference is they take out the gun. They put a smoke oil system. So as far as total weight, it's about the same. But that's really the primary difference that happens. That thing can be swapped out in about 48 hours if need be. Not that you'd ever see a Thunderbird, a red, white, and blue jet out in combat, but if it had to be, it could be pretty quick. So it's not really any lighter than a traditional F-16. The big difference is that you've got, in the Thunderbirds, we don't carry anything externally. If we're in a D model, meaning that there's a back seat, we'll put a centerline fuel tank to replace the fuel that you lose by having that back seat in there. But otherwise, we don't have any missiles, we don't have any bombs, we don't have any pylons, we don't have a ton of extra fuel on board or anything like that. And so that lightens us, obviously. And then on top of that, we've got pretty good engines. So because you don't have anything on there, not only do you lose the weight, but you lose the drag. So it's a super clean machine. Thunderbirds are flying with Pratt & Whitney 229s, and it's got 29,000 pounds of thrust. And when they take off for the show, they're at about 27,000 pounds. So you've got about 2,000 pounds more thrust than you have weight at takeoff. So it's no drag, because there's no pylons or anything like that on, or bombs that are creating a lot of drag. So, dude, it's pretty sweet, pretty slick. And just for y'all tracking, the last time, I think Mike and I covered this, when we talked last year was my last year at the Thunderbirds. So like we said, I'm out now in the civilian world. I'm going to be doing some reserve stuff. All right, cool. Let me scroll back and see where we're at. Let's see. Space Dreams again says, is it true the F-16 gains speed in the turns and you have to use the air brakes to slow down? The answer to that is it depends. It depends on what kind of engine you have in it, right? If you've got a big, nice GE engine or a big old Pratt & Whitney, then you're going to have a lot better thrust. It depends on what you have on the airplane. So you start putting a bunch of fuel tanks, bombs and targeting pods and all that stuff on the airplane. It's going to create a lot of drag, a lot of weight. And so it's not going to accelerate the same. Particularly, this is a factor in the F-16, even more so than like the F-15C, where because the F-16 is such a small fighter, you start adding weight, it makes a huge, and you only have one engine, it makes a huge difference on the performance capability. You take an F-15 and you fully load it down versus an F-16 fully loaded it down, there's going to be a huge performance difference between the two. One of the things that most, pretty much all fighters have now is the fuel tanks are drop tanks, right? So you hit a merge or you're going to somewhere where you need to turn and you need that performance. You can hit a button in the airplane and boom, those drop tanks go away. That drag goes away. That weight goes away. And now you're back up to a pretty high performing airplane. Sweet. Dan Dennett said, on a chippy training flight, an F-15 carved us up, went across front of us 50 feet away. What a buzz. Yeah, that would hopefully the wake turbulence from that didn't mess you up too bad. All right. Let's see. Arjun Raj said, F-15 versus Russian flankers, what's the best? Please reply. Russians make some pretty sweet flankers. That's definitely one of the ones that we focus on quite a bit in the F-15. Especially the more advanced variants. Flankers are sweet. They have a lot of gas. They can get fast, and they can turn pretty well. So it's a pretty sweet machine. Obviously, the F-15, I think, is a better airplane. We've got better radars. We've got better missiles. And the propensity of getting into a turning dogfight is pretty low. Even once you get there, we've got better off-foresight missiles and stuff like that. So F-15, any day on that one. All right. Sweet. Dave Carter says, what parameters does the team display limit to? Thinking low ceilings, crosswinds, and did you ever display and thought you shouldn't be flying? Question coming up from Canada. So, hey there. Yeah, David. So there's three different shows that the team performs based off of ceilings. So we have what's called a high show. We have a low show and we have a flat show. The high show is obviously if the weather's great, right? So you got 10,000 feet of clear clouds. You get below that, you get to a flat show, and then down, say you're at like 1500 feet, the clouds are at 1500 feet, you do a flat show. And those are developed for a reason. And so the answer to have I ever done something and thought we shouldn't be flying No, not from like a weather perspective or anything like that. We've got pretty good requirements on that. As far as crosswinds, the F-16 already has a crosswind restrictions and limitations. So nope, never had a flight that I thought we shouldn't be flying. All right, this one's fun. Timberwolf, UAP, in parentheses, UFOs, are being, quote, investigated by Congress. Tornado pilot said he saw something turn 90 degrees at speed near Nevada, Area 51. So what's your view on the subject? Plus, have you ever seen, question, chased something strange? I haven't, personally. And if I knew anything about it, I probably couldn't talk about it. But what I can say is I haven't seen anything. And if there was like, I mean, I think that it's really interesting that it's being researched. And I think that that's intelligent. We should be researching that, figuring out what's going on. But no, I don't know anything about it personally. All right, sweet. All right. Eric DeJean said, do you ever visit Lee Warden during your tour at Lake Neath? I did not, unfortunately. Martin Strumpfer, hopefully I pronounced that right, said, having flown both, would you say, what would you say to compare the two in an air-to-air role? I assume you're talking about between the F-15 and F-16. The F-15 is a aircraft that's specifically designed for the air-to-air role, right? It was much like the A-10 was built around a gun, the F-15 was built around a radar. And that large radar makes it more capable in the air-to-air world. You're talking about turning and burning, and if you got two aircraft that are completely clean, who's going to compare? Honestly, they're pretty dang close, like pretty identical. I think that kind of comes down to who's in the seat. If it's same weight, same everything between the two airplanes, it's pretty close within the visual range. But as far as the way wars are fought nowadays, the ESA radars that the Eagle has, that giant ESA radar, there's just in an air-to-air world, there's no comparison. The F-15 is far and above superior. Now you start putting ESAs in the F-16, we can have another conversation. But that's there's some Guard Reserve units that have that, but most don't yet. Hopefully they do get that, because it's a game changer when it comes to air-to-air capability. Troy Llewellyn. It says, have you ever flown European jets, Tornadoes, Rafale, Eurofighters? I've gotten to fly against them in training, but I've never gotten to fly them. Tornado, I mean, that thing doesn't really turn, but it can go fast, especially down low. Rafale, the electronic suite on that thing is just not fair. And I'm flying a Dassault airplane now. So the 7X that I fly for my primary job is a Dassault airplane. So, the electronic suite that's on the Rafale, not fair comparison. And the Eurofighter, I mean, that thing's great. That thing turns really well. It's got a lot of power, and it's impressive. Cool. Ooh, jumped down too much. Greg, oh God, I'm going to mispronounce this. Rapucci? Sorry, dude. Sorry, Greg. You said during UPT and later training, in your opinion, what factor sets apart the most successful students from the rest? That's a tough question. I know during our UPT class, as an aggregate or as a whole, not an aggregate, as a whole, our class did really, really well. And I accredit that to the fact that we worked together as a team really well, meaning that we studied together. We learned lessons from each other. We'd sit down, we'd debrief. Hey, what lessons did you learn? What did you get? You know, what debrief points did you get? And we all learned from each other. And so overall, as a class, we did really well. As far as the individual, I mean, I think everybody kind of figures it out. Ultimately, it just comes down to how much work you put in. Just like anything else in life, the more work you put in, the better the outcome's going to be. There is a certain level of natural talent that's there, but hard work makes a huge, really can overcome that pretty quick when it comes to flying. I mean, if you don't know your numbers and you don't know what's going to happen and it's not subconscious, ready to go, then when it comes time to doing it while flying, it can get really, really challenging. So I'd say the big difference is just those who work harder generally do better. All right, Stephen Boyd. Boss's man, it's Stephen from Insta. What's up, dude? Where'd you go to ROTC and what was it like? Sweet. I went to Texas A&M. It's a senior military college. So it's kind of like it has similarities to the academy in the fact that you live in the dorms for 4 years as you're going through the training. You do physical training almost every day. You know, you wear a uniform to class every day and that kind of stuff. But it wasn't as strict because on the weekends you could still go be a normal college student. And you got to go watch sweet games, watch the Aggies play, beat the hell out of whoever they're playing. So that's why I went to ROTC. All right, I got to go quicker. Let's see. No, you're not too bad. All right, let's see. Tattoo 2 says, I like the twos. Says, have you ever taken off either F-15 or F-16 without using afterburner? Yeah, absolutely, all the time. We run totaled every day before we go fly takeoff and landing data, and we'll run it for what we call mil power takeoff. So that's max power without using afterburners or afterburner takeoff. And depending upon noise abatement or whatever is going on that day, or if it's a fuel conservation, right? Say we want to go a long ways. If we do an afterburner takeoff, we're going to use a ton more gas because that's just an incredibly inefficient way to get power. It's sweet, but it's not efficient. So we'll take off. If we want to go a long distance, we'll take off in mil power just to get the extra fuel. Or like I said, if there's like a noise sensitivity issue or anything like that, as long as it's safe to do so, right? So as long as the total data tells us that we can get to where we are ready to take off and stop within the remaining distance is kind of the requirement. All right, SPQR77 said, what do you think of the F-15EX and its capabilities? I think it's a badass airplane, and I think that it is this is civilian dozen speaking now. I think it's a really smart move that the Air Force is making to buy these things. We know a lot about the F-15 airframe, and engineers have been able to go in and beef up what needs to be beefed up and, you know, kind of take out where it needs to be taken out. We've got sweet engines. We've got an awesome electronics package. And the fifth generation, that stealth capability is only required for so long, and it's only required in very specific wars. So, and even in those wars, after a couple of days, stealth may not be required. So having an aircraft that can carry 16 missiles, tons of gas, incredible avionics package, for the same price or cheaper than the fifth gen comparisons, it is a better airplane that if you take away the stealth aspect of it, it can go higher, it can go faster, it can loiter longer, it can carry more. I mean, there's a lot of value to it. And the lifespan on it's like, and Boeing guys, correct me if I'm wrong on this, I think the lifespan on this is like 30,000 hours of flight time, which is crazy, right? If you compare that to the F-35, what's the Marine version? F-35B, it's like 4,500 hours. And I think the most of the F-35s are somewhere between 9 to 10,000 hours lifespan that you get flight time on the airplane. So not only are you spending, you know, the same or less on an airplane that has a lot more capabilities minus stealth, you're going to have it around for much, much longer to be able to fly it. So I think it's real, real smart that they're doing that. Tevlar asked the same question. Do you wish you'd stayed in the Air Force, fly the F-15 Eagle II? I mean, it wasn't kind of in my cards at the time, and who knows, right? I'm still going reserves. I don't know. Maybe one day I'll jump into it. I don't know. I'm going to really enjoy where I'm going now, though. So, Sergeant Steele, heard they already talking about the F-22. Is this true? I've barely seen any in service. Retiring. There you go. And later on, talk about retiring the F-22. I've heard those rumors as well. I don't know. I don't think the generals have made the decision on that yet. And the thing is, there's only 186 of them. It's a badass airplane, but there's only 186 of them. So that's why it's barely seen any service. But we didn't build the 500 that we needed. And so when you have a program like that with such few airplanes, it gets really expensive to keep it up to date. And so I don't know. It would suck without a follow on, without kind of the next generation fighter ready to go. I think that'd be really short sighted, but it's really expensive. So I don't know There's a lot of nuances that the journalists have to think about to make those decisions, and I don't know what they've come up with yet. Do you think the F-15C still holds up today, or is the replacement EX long overdue? Do they have any engine airframe limits due to age? F-16 still holds up today. It upgrades that it's had, like the ESA radar specifically, just is a complete game changer for aerial combat. So, yeah, it's definitely still holds up. Do they have any engine air? But that said, the EX makes a lot of sense because the F-15Cs, I mean, most of those things are late 70s. I think the most modern ones we have are mid 80s. Lots of time on them. And so getting a new chunk of metal that also has sweet avionics and all these other things, but it's a concept that we know from an engineering perspective, I think makes a lot of sense. So I think it's pretty sweet. Timberwolf, any footage of dogfights that have been captured by something like Decent Headcam? Watching the Granny Gun cans is great, but something undetailed and one-dimensional, if not. Yeah, no, and then he said, if not, security issues. Yeah, there's tons of security issues. You're not going to see GoPros in jets like that. And then even if it was, stuff's going to be super classified. So, no, I don't think you'll see that, like a GoPro footage. And to be honest, dogfights don't happen that often anymore. You'll see, and I mean, you could do like a practice dogfight, but the problem is in GoPros and stuff like that, you're talking about aircraft that, you know, as they merge, they'll go out to a mile and a half away. So yeah, you're looking at them, you're watching them, and when you merge, you're getting no closer than about 500 feet. So it's not going to be good footage. So Flight Express, what's your favorite aircraft of all time? Also, do you ever fly in Canada or with the Royal Canadian Air Force? If so, any stories? Thanks. All right, sweet. So, yeah, I mean, my favorite aircraft's got to be my first love. It's the F-15. I've talked enough about it on that, though. Also, do you ever fly in Canada or with the Royal Canadian Air Force? So the only time I flew in Canada was last year with the Thunderbirds. We did a show in London, Canada. But because of COVID, we couldn't be in Canada. So we had to take off out of the United States, go fly the air show, and then come back and land. So didn't get to do that. What about the Canadian Air Force? Yeah, during ICAS last year, I had the opportunity to hang out with the Snowbirds in Las Vegas, and we had a good time. They're good people. All right, what do we got? If you return to the Air Force, what would be your aircraft of choice? I can't really complain. Like, the Air Force has a lot of really, really good aircraft, and I don't think I could be too choosy. I always thought it would be cool to fly the F-22 just because that thing has so much raw power. Next generation fighter is going to be sweet, from what I hear. And then the EX, I think, would be cool too, as long as they didn't put somebody in my backseat. Sweet. Elaine Wesley, you also ask, how close do you get to each other in the formation with Thunderbirds? So for us, generally, we're, you know, a couple feet away from each other during most of our maneuvers. The one that is kind of the exception to that is our Diamond Pass and Review, when we will go in kind of the traditional diamond formation in front of the crowd. And on that one, just based off optics, 2 has to actually tuck up underneath the wing of number 1. And if you're doing it correctly, you're directly underneath boss's left wing, and your canopy is about 18 inches away from his wing. And that's the closest that anyone gets in the formation, or at least the closest anyone plans to get. Michael Allen says, what was your GPA? Not as strong as it probably should have been. So I got a degree in civil engineering. I think when I left, it was like a 3.2. I started off in my first year of college, I super slacked off. I actually lost my Air Force scholarship for a semester because it was so terrible. And that's when I realized I had to get my crap together if I wanted to achieve the goals I wanted to. So I started working harder and got my GPA from a very low GPA up to a 3.2. So, John Minter said, do you ever fly ACM against Navy Super Hornets? I have flown against many Hornets. I've flown BFM against Navy Super Hornets. I've flown ACM and BFM against Australian Hornets, Legacy Hornets. They fly well. I think the Legacy Hornets, from what I understand, the Legacy Hornets have are pretty sweet. Super Hornets, there's some issues. They're a little underpowered, and they have a ton of drag because their pylons are actually canted out a little bit, so there's a ton of drag on them. But they're really sweet in the super slow regime. So as long as you can keep a Hornet fast, right? So you keep in the 400 knot regime, as long as you don't get him slow, like sub 200s, you get sub 200s in the Eagle, or an F-16, with a Super Hornet, and they're going to own you. So you just have to make sure that you stay fast. All right. Anthony, let's see, what's your name? Furnival? Anthony Furnival says, hypothetically, you are tasked to replace the Thunderbirds with any jet you like from anywhere in the world. Which jet would you pick and why? It's a good question. Honestly, I think that if the Thunderbirds had a bigger, hypothetically, right? The Thunderbirds had a bigger jet, it'd be really cool, right? The F-16's sweet, but we can be the same distance away from each other that like the Blue Angels are, but because they're so big, they look like they're a lot closer, right? Just optics. Now when they do their passenger review, they're freaking close. So I'm not saying that they're far apart, but what I'm saying is a bigger, louder jet would be really sweet. So yeah, I think if you were to put it like a F-15 or an F-22 into the Thunderbirds, like that would be sick. But the problem is it's expensive, right? Flying the F-15 or the F-22 is way more expensive than flying an F-16. So when you're talking about like, you know, value to the taxpayers and return on investment and that kind of stuff, the F-16 is by far the best airplane right now for us to fly. Maybe eventually once the F-35 gets cheaper to fly, it makes sense to do that. Now you've got issues with, all right, well, stealth and painting it red, white, and blue and all that stuff, because that would affect the paint scheme. So, So anyways, that's what I'd say. All right. Jason Parkinson said, do you ever think about applying to the YouTube program, or do you know anyone who did? I have not thought about doing the YouTube program, just because I was always kind of focused on other things. But yeah, I do have, actually, it's kind of funny. I have a friend from high school that went into the Air Force, and he went to I hope I don't get this wrong. KC-135s, I believe. I hope it wasn't KC-10s. And then he applied to the YouTube program, and he did that for a long time. And it was, and he loves it. His pictures are pretty sweet from that. All right. Let's see, Bat21 said, do you enjoy civilian, parentheses, general aviation? And what was the changes like going from the Air Force Fighter Squadron to the airlines? So I really like general aviation. So I actually live in the northwest corner of Arkansas right now. And there is a surprising amount of awesome aviation that's going on here. Not only are there cool airplanes here, there's incredible instructors, right? I mean, some of the best backcountry instructors are here. You've got really good helicopter pilots and instructors. And you've got from an aerobatic perspective, I mean, some of the best aerobatic pilots in the world are here. So it's actually really cool what all is going on here. What was it like transitioning, from a fighter squadron to the airlines? So I didn't go to the airlines. I'm flying what we call Part 91, in our FAA regulations, which is, basically just general aviation regulation. And I'm flying an airplane for a private individual. But the transition to a, crew airplane was a little bit different. Cause I'm used to flipping all the switches, making all the radio calls and stuff like that. So flying a big airplane, like the 7X, having somebody else that you have to work with, took a little bit of getting used to. And even now I'll still screw it up sometimes. The good thing is I have an awesome, co-captain with me. And so when I go and I do something that's like their responsibility, he kind of just laughs and I'm like, dang it. All right. And then I'll fix that for next time. So, it's pretty self-evident. So there's that. All right, Anthony, Furnival, again, you said if you could fly any aircraft from the Royal Air Force, past or present, what would it be and why? I don't know. It's probably too cliche, but I'd say the Spitfire, specifically some of the later ones. There is a beautiful Mark 18 Spitfire here in Northwest Arkansas, at the airfield that, that I'm at. And yeah, if I ever had the chance to go fly that, that would be awesome. That would be so cool. I've gone in and seen it as it's getting worked on and stuff like that. That Mark 18 is just, it's so cool. Timberwolf says, if you had a choice to fly absolutely any aircraft, and what would it be? Maybe not something obvious like the Spitfire F-22, but those work if you're stumped. So yeah, there you go. You take the two. You said any fighter, and I said 22, and then British fighter, I said Spitfire. Honestly, I don't know, man. Like I love flying all kinds of aircraft. I mean, I think it would be sweet to fly, honestly, all kinds of stuff, right? You know, you fly an old Corsair, you fly, some of the historical stuff, right? Like there's last week I was in New York, and there was a really cool air show, the Rhinebeck Air Show, happens every Saturday and Sunday in Rhinebeck, and which is New York. And it happens every Saturday and Sunday from like June to October. And most of the airplanes are flying there are over 100 years old. And like seeing some of those, I was like, wow, like that, there are some really awesome airplanes there. And so I think it'd be sweet to, honestly, whatever anybody will let me fly, I'm going to jump in, and love doing it. All right. Steven Boyd says, any advice for a pilot heading into the RAF? Dude, work hard. It's going to be challenging. My recommendation would be understand that you're going to have a lot to do. A lot to learn, and it's going to be really hard. One thing about being a pilot is that you will be humbled over and over again. Flying is not easy, and there's no perfect flight, and so you will always be making mistakes. Accept them, and then work to make them better every single time. So it's a continuous self-improvement, and know that going in, and know that you're working as hard as you can. If that's the case, then you got to be happy with the outcomes that happen. Don't get too dejected or upset by your failures as you go along, because you're gonna fail as you go along. All right, T Hammer says go Navy. Sure. Let's see. T Hammer says, what's the optimum turn rate slash speed of the Viper you operated during regular service? So I actually never operated the F-16 in regular service. The only time I flew it was to learn to fly it at Holloman Air Force Base, and then with the Thunderbirds. Well, and then with the Aggressors a little bit. But optimum turn rate speed, most fighters are about the same. So in most fighters, you're looking just nowadays, modern fighters, you're looking somewhere between 400 to 450 knots, somewhere in that regime is going to be your best, like sustained turn rate. Somewhere in the high 300s is generally your best instantaneous turn rate. And then managing your energy so you don't bleed too much at the inappropriate time is important. But yeah, that's kind of what you're looking at for as far as your rate, your best speed for your best rates in pretty much all most fighters nowadays. Thaman says, how do you like living in your new location? Honestly, so like I said, as Northwest Arkansas, I'm honestly really surprised. When this job opportunity came up, I was not really looking. There's a lot of stereotypes about Arkansas, and so it really took coming out here and seeing what's going on to really realize, like, oh, this place is actually really awesome. The backcountry flying here is amazing. Like there's like something like 40 aircraft or 40 lane like grass strips within like a 40-mile radius of this place. And you talk about the Ozarks, so like beautiful things off cliffs and valleys and all kinds of cool stuff. There's like, I don't know, something like 200 miles of single track mountain biking courses here that is awesome. I like mountain biking. I like going fast. So the mountain biking here is like, it's like the mountain biking capital of the world. There's a huge art scene. We've got Crystal Bridges, which is like there's a world-class like museum. There's a couple other museums. It's really surprising and more than I expected. So it's been pretty sweet. And the chance to fly so many cool airplanes. That was definitely something that got me excited about coming out here. David Carter says, have you ever experienced G-lock? So all fighter pilots have had their experience with dealing with G's in one way or another. I have not G-locked, thankfully. I know many people who have. Some have had the chance to wake up beforehand, some haven't. But I came close one time. So as a fairly experienced able guy, I was fighting defensive BFM, so where you're looking backwards, and I was fighting against a guy that I knew was really good, and I wanted to make sure that I could put on my best break turn possible, right? So as soon as he sets fights on, you try to get as close as you can to 9 Gs and sustain that, and give him so many angles that he essentially can't solve for it. And so I get really hyper-focused on that, and dude, like I said, it was an experienced dude at the time. And looking back, and he calls fights on, and I just go, and I set on a really good break turn. But I didn't G-strain to the level that I needed to, that I knew I should have. And everything went dark and it went black. I still kept consciousness because the second that it went black, I let go and I maintained consciousness. I was able to call terminate as things were still kind of dark. Call terminate and we came home. So I never completely lost consciousness. But I've come pretty close. It's no matter how many times you do it, you have to get ready for the G's every single time you pull them. You can't have one time that you get off. Sweet. Bat 21 again says, do you like the reclined 30 degree seat in the F-16 or the less reclined seat in the F-15? For the F-16 seat, tends to give it pilot neck issues. Every fighter pilot has neck issues. Neck and back issues are just, when you're pulling that many G's and you're looking backwards, it doesn't matter if your seat's reclined or not, like you have problems. The F-16 seats, I don't know, like I'm kind of indifferent about it because it is kind of nice that you lay back, but at the same time, you got to pull your head up to actually see in front of you. You never actually rest your head on the headrest. So, but it does make it kind of easier to look backwards if you're fighting defensive BFM. So it's kind of six one way, half dozen the other. I don't really prefer one over the other. All right. Max Core said, any YouTube tips for us to watch your favorite flying videos? My favorite flying videos. YouTube tips. I don't know. So I have a YouTube video that I put on, I think I put online about it. It's like a demonstration kind of from my perspective of the entire demonstration in 2020. It's like synced up with the audio and the video. Just from a GoPro 360, kind of looking at different things. So if you want to check that out, I mean, I think it's got like 40 views or something like that. Otherwise, no, I don't have a whole lot. I put a lot of my videos on Instagram. Dozen.aldridge is my Instagram account. But now that's obviously transitioned more to civilian flying and flying the game birds and aerobatics and stuff like that. So if you can dig back there and see some cool 360, Mace Curran, she's the number 5 pilot on Thunderbirds. She's kind of the only one that's still putting out really good videos, of in cockpit footage. So if you want to see what it's like doing that, that's pretty cool. And then, yeah, we'll see. I got some things in the work for maybe a YouTube channel and some cool flying, but that's yet to be, resolved yet. All right. Templar7832 again says, was the Eagle your first choice flying with the Air Force, or did you receive it and come to love it afterwards? Eagles rock. Dude, it was actually my first choice. So I knew I wanted to go fast, so I wanted something with afterburners. I knew I wanted to be single seat because I didn't like having people in my back seat switching things for me. So the Strike Eagle was out for me. And between the F-16 and F-22, or the F-22 was not an option. The F-35 was not an option when I was going through pilot training. So it was between the F-15 or the F-16 for my top choice. And I really liked the two engines because I had done a lot of ELPs, emergency landing patterns, or SFOs, as they're called, simulated flameouts, in the F-16. And I liked having the redundancy. And I've had to shut down Eagle engines before, and I'm really happy that I was in an Eagle and not in an F-16 when those happened. All right, Anthony Furnival says, how do you rate the current Russian jets? They're all right. Honestly, I think that if you're going to look anywhere for like the latest and greatest outside of the United States or outside of like Western countries, go look what China's doing. They're making some pretty advanced stuff. And that's some things you really, really have to be paid attention to. So. All right, Timberwolf says, do you have any funny or crazy, maybe red flag or some workup or missions or deployment stories you could talk about? Also, the most hairy, scary moment when flying. Yeah, let's see. I mean, so we were doing a large force exercise. It was called Iron Falcon or Falcon's Nest, one of the two, in the UAE. And it was a large exercise. We had French and German, and the Brits were there. With the Tornadoes and the Eurofighter, we had like Jordan was there, Pakistan brought some airplanes in, Saudi Arabia and stuff like that. So we had F-15s, F-22s, strikes at this large force exercise. So it was a good number of people. And I remember we were in the hold, and we're waiting to push, and we had this, you have a specific altitude, and we're maybe 3,000 feet apart, maybe a mile apart. As we turn hot, as we're like going cold to turn hot, we got a Rafale that passes like right between us. And I'm sure it was, nothing against the French or anything like that. I'm sure it was a brand new lieutenant who didn't know what's going on. But man, it was freaking close. So we made fun of them quite a bit after that. Also, your most hairy, scary moment when flying. Like I said, the G-Lock one, that was pretty scary. There were some issues. I won't go into too much details, but there were some issues I had where I had carbon monoxide poisoning in an airplane. And that one was pretty terrifying because your ability to make decisions correctly go away. You're like if you lose an engine or you lose a generator or you lose whatever, right? Your canopy falls off. Like you're still processing things. And all right, I feel pretty confident. There's anything that could go wrong with the airplane, I can take care of. Worst case scenario, I can make the decision to pull the handle. But once you get carbon monoxide poisoning and your mental ability to processing degrades, that one gets real scary because you're not in control of your own mind and your own decision making at that point, the way that you're used to. So that one was pretty scary. Stephen Boyd says, what's your favorite pilot pickup line? I've been with my wife for like 19 years now, so I've never used any. Michael Allen said, what are the repercussions of that almost G-lock situation when you got back to base? I mean, no repercussions for me. I was a fairly experienced guy. I didn't G-lock. We just made the decision to stop, come home, hydrate, right? And it was something that I kind of talked about and explained to other squadron mates, like, hey, don't let this kind of fall off your habit pattern. And make sure that you're always treating it as if it's, could be your last pull. So, but I have had lots of I've had several friends or students who have had issues when they're going through training. And in those situations, generally, there's very thorough tape reviews that go on to make sure that the G strains are working appropriately. And if they have issues, we'll send them back to the centrifuge to test them again and make sure that their G strain is working correctly and make sure that their body can handle it. But yeah, so that's what happened from there. All right. YouTuber, interesting name, said, curious the story of your call sign. Doesn't this kind of unique? I assume that this is going to stay online, so just feel free to rewind and watch it from the beginning. All right. Freddie Martin says, hello, I was wondering if you had ever flown Death Valley, Star Wars Canyon, or the Mach Loop. Star Wars Canyon, there's a few places in the world that are Star Wars Canyon. There is a really sweet low-level run over the Sierra Mountains in California. If you take off out of Nellis and you work your way west and you get past the range, there's a really sweet low-level there. And there's some canyons in there to include, like, at one canyon go over and then super steep that are really sweet. Alaska has some pretty awesome ones as well that we got the chance to do. And then honestly, Saudi Arabia probably had some of the best. They had some really sweet canyons that, I mean, obviously there's nobody out there taking pictures or anything like that, but it was pretty sweet. Haven't done the Mach Loop like we talked about earlier.
So it doesn't, if you want to maybe pick, maybe two or three questions while we wrap up this Q&A, that'll be great.
Sweet. Y'all are probably tired of hearing me talk anyways. That's kind of weird doing this like one-on-one, no interaction, but we'll just power through it. Let's see, who have I not talked? Well, Anthony Furnival, I've answered you already, but you said, do you have any plans for air show flying as a civilian? Maybe. I am working with the IAC, which is the International Aerobatics club to do some competitive aerobatics. So I've done one competition, and I'm going to continue to compete in that. And yeah, maybe one day I'll do some air show stuff. Hopefully I'll hope to go to ICAST this year and get some other things going on. So hopefully, all right, who have I answered? All right, Mark Featherstrom. Apologies if it's already been asked, but you seem relatively young, and often in interviews, former fighter pilots are still quite young. Is it you or the Air Force who decides to stop flying fighters? So I'm not that young. I'm in my mid-30s. I'm 35. And the Air Force doesn't really make that decision. Most people's bodies continue to break down a little bit, just from pulling all the G's. I decided to get out, but I'm going to continue to do it in the reserves. So now generally Air Force won't stop you until you start getting really old. But by then your body's pretty much done. So most people will make the call well before that. So, all right, sweet. Guys, I appreciate all y'all's questions. This is kind of fun. Hopefully it wasn't too weird with just like me reading and talking, but it's odd not having that kind of back and forth conversation. But I do really appreciate all y'all taking the time and wanting to listen to me talk. Matt, I appreciate you putting this together.